The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Ray Winston, Del Boy and Rodney, cast of EastEnders, your boys took one hell of a beating. Yes, call it Mad Manx 2 beyond Thunderdome, as young men in flash sportswear run riot in North London, deja vu, and give Frenchmen thanks but no mercy at Old Trafford. We ask the hows, the whys and the what the whats of an extraordinary day in English football. Elsewhere, there's the rest of the weekend's action too. Post, tweets and Spain. Stand by for some surprises here as well, as Real Madrid get a big win against a team that's not their Catalan rivals, and Barcelona win another trophy. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. Momentous weekend in football. A momentous pod standing by to look back on it all. On board today, we have Kevin McCarra. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, James.
Hello to you. Jacob Steinberg, another season debut. And Michael Cox of ZonalMarking.net.
Hello, James.
Hi there. Thanks for manifesting here in near-Earth orbit. Magnificent. How about that, then? Probably the biggest surprise result in the Premier League in years, no? Everton winning a game in August. Borrowing your joke there, Jacob Steinberg.
Yeah. I'll charge royalties for that.
But to top stuff, here's another joke I'm going to borrow. This one's from Darren Geraghty, who says, what about a headline, 8-2 brutal? Yeah, very nice.
Hate to be an Arsenal fan.
Yeah. Hate to be an Arsenal fan. Yeah.
I haven't heard that joke yet.
Extraordinary Sunday. Manchester teams absolutely destroying two sides from North London. City, of course, got the ball rolling. We'll come on to that in a second. United, though, with an 8-2 victory, not just an 8-2 victory, but an 8-2 victory against a team that not long ago was their title rival. Things have changed a lot, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible to see Arsenal so exposed. I realise they haven't been able to bring in players. But if you'd looked at the teams for the game, you thought, well, this is, again, Man U fielding a kind of makeshift back four, but which they also did last week, the previous Monday, and they won that game quite easily against Spurs. And so your perceptions alter. Having thought, you know, what is Chris Smalling doing at right back last Monday? And you think, oh, yes, he's a right back, that's okay. You know, and it's that kind of instantaneous quality about Ferguson's teams. Things come together and they seem to work for him. I wouldn't have imagined Johnny Evans being one of the best players. I mean, sometimes you feel maybe he's not at the same level as the others, and yet yesterday, obviously, he and the rest of the team thrived.
Did they, or do you think their performance up front should kind of master a multitude of sins at the back? I mean, Evans, I wasn't convinced by it, and De Gea again contributing.
Well, no, De Gea, I thought Evans okay, but De Gea, I agree. I mean, in every game, there's a mistake so far, and that would eventually cost them. But clearly, on the other hand, he does have talent, and you know, he became the hero of the crowd by saving the penalty. But yes, I would say if it wasn't for the prolific scoring, there'd be more attention being paid to De Gea. But what impressed me was guys like Cleverley, for example, in midfield, and also Anderson, who I think has been playing very well recently. People kind of are a bit down on Anderson, but I think he's given them a lot of drive at the moment.
Well, prolific they were. An interesting comment from Sir Alex after the game. We could have scored more, but we didn't want to. They put eight past Arsenal.
Yeah.
But they went easy on them.
they showed mercy.
Well, yeah, you know, it's not good for Wenger when Fergie starts giving him sympathy.
What did you make of United then? Was it an astonishingly good performance by them or an astonishingly bad one from Arsenal?
A bit of both, really. I think United, they are playing really, really well. They were fantastic against City in the Community Shield, and then they played really well against Spurs. But it was such a terrible Arsenal performance, and even Wenger said by the last 20 minutes that it just looked like they'd given up. And it just feels like it's been coming towards this now. This kind of awful result for them.
I just say, I agree with you. I mean, it's interesting, before the game when we had these compliments for Wenger from Ferguson, and that was him writing off Wenger, wasn't it? He's now a fellow manager and not a threat to me, so I'm going to metaphorically put my arm around his shoulder and patronise him.
What was the mood like in the stadium as the scoreline mounted?
Gleeful, I think. I think you know, if they remember back to times when Arsenal were their tormentors. And this is, as much a revenge as you could ever take.
Yeah, indeed. It was a different Arsenal, though, an Arsenal side eight players out, with a player who was in non-league football a year ago, others that will be in non-league football probably next year. And as you pointed out, Michael, a player on the bench who doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. So should we not be getting too carried away about this?
I mean, they have a lot of players out, but you look at players like Jenkinson and Traore, and they are the backups. They're second choice. They're not third choice or fourth choice. They're not reserve players.
We should also say that the Man U team was a makeshift team. Yeah, you know, that's not Man U's defence as we knew it before the season started. So it's only because they played so well that we regard the Man U team as having been somehow, you know, authoritative and in command of events. But if you told me back in July the back four was going to be Smalling, Jones, Evans, you know, I'd have been surprised.
Yeah, funnily enough, I thought probably the most experienced player ever was probably the weakest.
Yeah.
I thought he kept getting caught out. The two goals came from in behind his side. I think possibly for the penalty as well, he might have made a mistake. It wasn't his foul, but I think he was out of position. United's defence has grouped together really well. Very impressive already.
Mm. And they're younger than Arsenal. It was a younger United team.
Was it 0.6 years per player, I believe.
It's interesting, too, that although Ferdinand must be kind of fit because he's on the bench, he still didn't make the England squad, as if, Capello didn't feel the need to pick him, and prefers, presumably, someone like Phil Jones.
Mm. Is this a two-team league, Kevin?
It's kind of looking that way, but Chelsea do have means, don't they, if Roman Abramovich wants to turn that on again. Maybe it's too late in this transfer window. He has bought players, of course, but I think Chelsea probably still need further redevelopment.
Mm.
And Abramovich's response over the next year or two to what's happening at Man City will be informative.
Mm. Well, it is interesting. Very early, of course, and Chelsea could well end up... they're having a major say in the title this year. We'll talk more about them later on. Let's talk about City next, though. One question. Arsenal's collapse. Did that take the heat off Harry, do you think? Harry Redknapp?
Possibly. I doubt he would have got too much criticism because I think Manchester
City were
very good. Yes. And
8 goals conceded in 2 games.
Yeah, and I was reading today that his record from the last, I think it's 45 games, if you take the same period as Juan de Ramos was in charge. So he was in charge for 45. Take Harry Redknapp's last 45. And I think Redknapp's only won one more game than Ramos in that period.
Right. Be interesting to see if they can get 2 points by the time they get to 8 games into the season.
Yeah. If they don't, then I think his job will probably come under threat. But, I mean, it's been coming in a way for Tottenham because they were very poor towards the end of last season. And I thought Redknapp's selection, I'm not sure if Huddleston was fit enough to play. But if he was, it was a strange decision to play Modric and Krancha in central midfield because neither of them are anything remotely like ball winners.
Yeah.
And City had Silva and Nasri coming into that zone, had Aguero coming into that zone. And it was just very difficult to see how Tottenham weren't going to concede quite a few goals.
Well, it was almost like he was trying to make Levy go out and buy Parker.
Yeah, possibly.
It's also an interesting gamble, though, isn't it? This Modric business. Presumably they think we're going to hold him. And once the transfer window comes to a close, he'll have no option but to start playing properly. But
did he play that badly yesterday, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think just generally he's been unhappy about being denied his and the move to Chelsea, and I think that would unsettle him. I mean, I don't think that wasn't obviously the biggest problem in the game, but I think generally speaking it's a concern to have a player of that talent who feels alienated from the club.
Sure. He told Redknapp before 2 hours before the game that he didn't want to play.
That's what Redknapp says, yeah.
That's what Redknapp said, so... You know,
yeah. But you watched the game, Jacob.
Yeah.
Did you think he was that bad?
They were overrunning midfield. City completely outnumbered them, and you looked at the, as Michael says, Modric and Krancher in midfield, and you could see what was going to happen, and they couldn't get close to Nasri, who was really, really good and had 3 assists on his debut, and apparently involved in something like 11 goal scoring chances.
Right. So. Well, Spurs with a terrible record so far, but then again, they've played. Two very strong teams. There might be a lot of teams who are suffering this kind of defeat, you know, over the next couple of months. Two Man United and Man City.
Well, it does look like a two-team league unless Chelsea can get their act together.
I was also intrigued by Man City. Dzeko, for example, it's interesting that Tevez not playing seems to give him more prominence, rather than having to get both of them in the middle of the attack, you know. And
it looks a transformed team all over. I mean, this side that used to go to White Hart Lane and.
Yeah, last season they had their first away. The first game of the season for City last season was at Spurs, and they got battered. And Spurs could have won it 3 or 4-0. It was only because of Joe Hart and some really bad misses that they didn't. And City were so defensive, and you know, Tevez was completely isolated. Yesterday they had five players going forward all the time. You look at that team and you think there's no reason why they couldn't actually win the Champions League.
Well, last season we were complaining a lot about them playing with the handbrake on, that Mancini was being too defensive. Yeah. Has that completely gone out the window, do you think now, Michael?
I think we'll have to wait and see. I still think that there is an element of Mancini that maybe he's more built for knockout competitions. I mean, he's got a great record in cups. He's already won a cup with City. He won Coppa Italia four or five times in his time in Italy. And I mean, league football is all about getting the 3 points, so you do have to be predominantly an attacking side. But it's good to see, and I think that the absence of Tevez seems to make them more cohesive and more of a team. I thought Tevez was fantastic last season, but the way they played with him as, you know, false nine in this 4-3-3, it meant that it was all about him. And I think now with Nasri and Silva and Aguero, who are very talented players, but I think also very selfless players, I think they've got a really good team.
All right, Nasri, why didn't Arsene get him playing that way?
Well, he had a good season last season.
He did tail off, though.
He did tail off dramatically. And just seeing him out there, I mean, people talking about the tracking back, but this business of staying out on the wings, putting the crosses in. And when you think of the way that he was playing for Arsenal, is that kind of frustrating, coming inside, wasteful?
I guess you could say that Arsenal don't have someone like Dzeko, which has, you know, allegedly been their problem for a long time. Mm.
I was going to say about Man City. I watched a game at Bolton the other week, and it struck me that Julian Lescott struggled badly in that match, and I wonder if he maybe is somebody who's not quite at the level of the very top clubs. But
they would have Colo Torre to come back.
Well, now his drugs from thing is coming to an end, isn't it? Then again, I mean, you watch Lescott against Kevin Davis, who's supposed to be a match for him physically, and was
the other thing
dominated by
City is that De Jong was injured yesterday, so that did make it slightly easier for Mancini to go gung-ho.
I think the centre-half missed him at Bolton as well, De Jong for the cover.
Mm. Mm. Still very impressive stuff from City, and Bayern Munich, Napoli and Villarreal no doubt taking note their future Champions League group, because novices they may be in this competition, but I wouldn't think many people would be surprised to see
really
them go a long way.
You can't really call them novices though, because of the team they've got. They're all experienced Champions League players, most of them.
Yeah,
it's not like Spurs getting it.
I think, speaking of Arsenal, it's interesting what a good performance they put up in Udine during the week, and the contrast between that. You know, and the
weekend. Also the contrast between Udinese and the same thing.
Yeah, both things apply. But they had a great, fantastic spirit in Udine, which seemed to disappear somewhere along the way.
Well, that's true. It is also true that players were available in Udine that weren't available on Sunday, and also that Udine was pretty hot, as you would testify.
It was quite humid.
And Arsene hinted at that being a major factor in the way they tailed off physically in the Old Trafford game.
I think it's worth pointing out as well that Arsenal were very good in the second half in Udine, but I think Udinese hit the post and the bar twice in the first half.
Yeah.
If those had gone in and Di Natale's header had gone in, it had been 3-0 at half time.
Missed a penalty as well.
Mm. And they missed a penalty. I mean, who knows what could have happened? It was a good performance in the end.
Wenger looked like he was close to tears in his post-match interview on Sky. It just got a bit painful to watch towards the end that game. It was sort of just a bit embarrassing to be sitting there witnessing it.
Well, it is a question. Let's finish off part one by asking then, you know, terrific for Man United and Man City, but what next for those two North London sides? You mentioned the Scott Parker deal. Adebayor as well signed on loan for the rest of the season for Spurs.
Well,
Who's worse off, Spurs or Arsenal?
I'd say Arsenal at the moment. I don't think there's too much wrong with Spurs. I think they've played two really, really good teams, and they still have the problem with Modric. Crouch missed a very good chance when it was 1-0 and City went straight up the other end and made it 2-0. And we would have thought that Adebayor would have scored that goal. So I don't think there's too... You know, there's still a good side, and they've got some players to come back as well. They were missing Huddleston yesterday. But Arsenal, it's just... You look at someone like Traore playing at left-back, and this is a guy who is out on loan for the last 3 years and suddenly he's back and... Where's he come from? And Coquelin playing in defence midfield. I know that they had the players out, but it's just that Wenger's allowed it to get to that situation of Nasri and Fabregas staying for so long and leaving himself no time to go into the transfer market and buy anybody.
I mean, to be fair, he's not responsible for the timing of the bids that were made for these players. You know, it did come very comparatively late.
But if you look at Manchester United selling Ronaldo, they just got him out the door straight away and did their business, and then they were and Tevez as well, two years ago. It was just done. Whereas Arsenal have let it drag on, just said, no, you're out.
But you have to get an offer. I mean, I think Barcelona took quite a while to get the money together for the bid.
2 days left in the transfer window. Arsenal have secured their passage to the group stage of the Champions League. And they could get players in. There's a lot of players they're linked with. They have a lot of money supposedly to spend. Yeah. But an 8-2, a result that saw them concede more goals in the league than they had since
1896.
Loughborough. Yeah. Is that something that's going to leave a major scar on their season that there isn't, that you can't recover from with a couple of signings?
The spirit in the team looks so bad as well, that early on when Jenkinson and Walcott had the row, and players will be looking at that and think, I don't want to go there. Why would they go there?
And yet the morale was very good in Udine. Really good at response to a difficult game.
I think what we need now is for Wenger to really say what the target for the season is. I mean, I dare say earlier in the summer he probably would have said we can still challenge for the league. At this point in time, I really can't see that happening. So what is it for Arsenal? Is it fourth place? I think we need to be able to measure Wenger's performance at the end of the season, and it's got to the point where he can no longer talk about young players, he can no longer talk about development, he can no longer talk about not having money to spend. We really do need to see some product.
Do you think in a sort of strange sort of way that it's the kind of defeat that they might have needed just to shake him out of it? Or do you think it's just not going to have any impact?
I mean, in theory, 2 days from the end of the transfer window with 30 million in the back pocket, it would be perfect. But after the game, he said he wanted to focus on bringing back players rather than bringing in new players. I'm not really sure that you can't do the same at once. But
it's almost unthinkable, I mean, but you do wonder whether they are going to retain membership of that top four Champions League club that they've had for so long.
7 points behind Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean,
6 points behind
Liverpool. I mean, obviously, there's a bit to go yet. The way they're playing, they both find it hard to get into the top four.
Well, that's it for part one. Part two awaits with Sid Lowe and more after this. So far, we've got through to Sid's answering machine. While we resolve that situation, a couple of other bits of interest about Europe. No Italian football, of course, this weekend. The strike was on. They had a televised debate about it. That's nice. on Sunday night, in place of the usual action. and no resolution there. But there's a big meeting on Thursday. Last comment from Damiano Tomasi, the head of the players' union, was that this could take months to sort out. So that's cheery then, eh? In the meantime, quick word on the European draws that happened on Friday, and very excited everyone was to see Shamrock Rose going through. Paul Doyle was going to join us today, but sadly he's fallen ill. So next time he's in, he can tell us all about Shamrock Rovers. Congratulations to them. Puts the situation in Scotland in perspective, doesn't it, there, Kevin?
Yes.
You know, all four Scottish teams out in Europe in August.
Unless.
Kicking the Nad says, the funniest part is they just moved the start of their season forward to July in order to help their teams in Europe. One has to wonder just how badly Rangers and Celtic would have lost to Maribor and Sion if it hadn't been for that.
No, it's a pretty shocking. Although, I mean, it's most unsatisfactory, but there's still this complaint continuing about Sion's players on their eligibility.
Right, so Sion fielded players that they signed when they were supposedly on a transfer ban.
Well, they were banned for some reason for buying players in two transfer windows, and according to FIFA, and also Platini, I don't know, speaking on behalf of UEFA or himself, said that, you know, as far as he can see, these players are not eligible.
Right.
So it now goes to the Sports Arbitration Court, and they will rule on it before the group stage of the Europa League.
Well, you'd hope so, because Celtic might be in there.
Yeah. But I mean, it's really, you think, it's almost like a fast track process where these things could be resolved before Celtic. Because it's about, you know, obviously, if Sion won with an eligible player, if that's not right. But equally, you have a game where Celtic have been beaten, it doesn't count for anything, and that's not right either. It's a game, if the games have to be, if Sion are thrown out, then those games have just been a complete, you know, waste of time. And it's a shame there isn't a quicker way of getting an answer to these questions.
Yeah, like poor, who was it? Was it Atletico Madrid who played Trabzonspor in the Europa League playoffs, only to then discover that Trabzonspor had now disappeared from the competition and gone into the Champions League in place of Fenerbahce? All very exciting. There you go. The impression is that Celtic will go in place of Sion.
I don't know. I mean, but the players do not seem to be eligible. And if that's the case, the logic would say, well, Sion cannot continue in the tournament if they've won games with... Not only had they won the games, these players have been influential in winning those games. I mean, that's not one of the rules, but right. It does stick in your mind that the players who shouldn't have been there had an impact.
Also out of the Europa League, Barca-Roma. The Roma, you know, the big... Yeah. the brave new experiment that they're conducting there in the Eternal City. And they'd lost their first leg against Slovan Bratislava 1-0 in Bratislava. And second leg back at the Stadio Olimpico, a lot of support, a lot of passion there, and a lot of confidence, I think, that Luis Enrique's side was going to come right. They went a goal up. Everything looked fine. 75 minutes in, Luis Enrique, who's been having a bit of a running battle with Francesco Totti, who's been waging war with T-shirts principally, he took him off as a kind of demonstration of who counted in the team and who didn't, at which point Roma collapsed and conceded a goal and crashed out the Europa League. So the Roma press is now firmly out against Luis Enrique. It's going to be a very interesting season when and if it ever gets underway in the capital. There you go. Let's try now, having hummed and hawed and prevaricated a little bit, I wonder if Sid might now be taking our calls. No, still on the line with Chappers. Okay, Championship. Hey, Jacob, you must have enjoyed your Sunday. Spurs getting mashed up a treat. And West Ham going to Nottingham Forest and winning 4-1. Woof.
I know, it's very un-West Ham-like, yeah. Winning all these away games.
Are you happy about Scott Parker going if he goes?
Well, the midfield's been a bit clogged up with him in it. And it's quite interesting because when Allardyce came to Newcastle and Parker was there, he sold him very quickly.
Ooh.
And seems this is what he's going to do again. Clearly he wants Kevin Nolan to be the main guy there. And they've kind of got in each other's way so far, Nolan and Parker. So they looked a bit more balanced yesterday. Only watched the first half.
Because then you had to work on the Spurs thing. All right. Yeah, but good result anyway.
Yeah, now they just have to do it at home.
All right. Southampton lost at Leicester, which means that Brighton go top.
Southampton were really unlucky, though, because the third goal for Leicester was a foul, basically. Sol Bamba was basically assaulting Ricky Lambert and made him score an own goal, bullet header into his own net, which was the decisive goal. Made it 3-1 and that was finished 3-2 in the end.
All right.
That's Southampton's first defeat, so not bad for Sven.
Hmm. In other Football League news, Paolo Di Canio, Swindon lost another game. This one 2-1 at Shrewsbury. They're now fourth from bottom in the League Two table with 3 points in five games. It's an interesting experiment, that one, Di Canio at Swindon.
There were a lot of West Ham fans who wanted him, for around 3 or 4 years, whenever a managerial vacancy crops up at Upton Park, let's get Paolo in, let's get Paolo. And it's always the ones, you know, when Sky Sports News go to Upton Park on a weekday and interview people who are standing outside, they'll go, yeah, no, let's definitely get Di Canio in, and this maybe will shut that up.
Well, I don't know. Swindon was not going to be an easy club to go and...
No,
pretty success at without money, without players, etc.
And with a bit of a nut job in the dugout.
Well, yeah. Anyway, all right then. Sid Lowe.
Hello, can you give me 5 minutes? Is that all right?
Yes, Sid.
Thank you very much indeed.
No problem.
Right on the end of sending this. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mm. Okay. On an unrelated note, Craig Bellamy. Popescu says, I thought it was a real shame that you guys singled out Craig Bellamy as an example of a player who's prepared to rot in the reserves in order to keep a high salary. Bellamy, says Popescu, is actually an example in the opposite direction. Last year he took a pay cut and dropped a division in order to play at his hometown club. It's no secret he's trying to engineer the same move this summer. He also has an unimpeachable record, good word that, of turning up to play for Wales in meaningless friendlies that will doubtless lose 4-0 in front of a meager crowd on a wet Wednesday night in November. Thanks, Popescu. Fair point. Well made. The move that Bellamy's trying to engineer is to Liverpool, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. And Liverpool, you know, we're talking about a two-team league, and we're talking about where Arsenal going to finish this year. What is the big target that Kenny Dalglish is aiming for this year with Liverpool?
Champions League football, I would have thought. I think it would be very difficult for them to put together a title run. They've bought very well. I think, you know, they bought three quite high-profile players at the start of the summer, and Adam and Henderson and Downing. But I think Jose Enrique is a really, really good signing. Very good value for money, premiership experience, great technical quality. I'm quite impressed that they're about to sign Sebastian Coates.
Yeah, tell us more about him, Michael.
Well, I saw him quite a lot in the Copa America, and I was very impressed. He's very tall. I think he's 6'6", but to me, he looks more of a sweeper almost than a man marker. I think he's a covering defender rather than someone who likes to get tight. Uruguay defended very deep generally, and I gather that there might be an issue with a lack of pace, but I haven't seen that yet. As I say, they defended deep, so it wasn't exposed.
Who will he replace in the back four then?
It's a difficult question, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, in theory, I think Daniel Agger's a fantastic defender.
Exactly, yeah.
But he's very injury-prone.
And Carragher's untouchable, is he?
Supposedly. Carragher's a strange one because, you know, generally when you've got a player like that who can play fullback and can play centre-back, as they get older and lose a bit of pace, they look better at centre-back. Yeah. But I've thought Carragher's looked a bit dodgy at centre-back recently, whereas when he's been out on the right, I've been quite impressed by him charging up the touchline.
Mm-hmm. Kenny sometimes plays three at the back, of course.
He has, yeah, a couple of times. Maybe that'll be an option. Norwich did that this weekend, actually, at Stamford
Bridge. All right, let's come on to the Norwich game at Stamford Bridge, because Chelsea got the win, but once again, they looked, especially in the context of what the Manchester clubs are up to, rather sluggish.
I remember going to Chelsea quite a lot when Mourinho was there as an away fan, and it just felt like you couldn't get out of your own half. And then I went last season at the end of the year, and they gave you a lot more time to play, and you were able to create a lot more chances. And this was a pretty awful West Ham side as well that were doing this. And I've seen all their games so far, and the defence just looks very dodgy. Part of that is down to Cech being injured, but also Terry seems to be losing what little pace he had originally. I think Alex made a pretty awful mistake against West Brom, and I think when Norwich equalised, they were kind of looked like they might go on a nick it before Ramirez got the penalty. So yeah, there's a lot of work to be done for VS Bias.
Stoke, West Brom, and Norwich—the three teams they've played so far—they made fairly heavy going of it.
Yeah, and they still Torres hasn't scored yet. He hasn't. I'm not sure if he's had a shot on target yet.
Are you unconvinced by Mikel? All years I've watched him, I've never really felt that he was, you know, suited to that.
Yeah, he's just one of those players where, if you're doing a minute by minute, for example, you won't mention him once.
No.
So it's kind of difficult.
You know, if he's playing in the middle, he's not Claude Makélélé, is he? I mean, he's not.
No,
you know,
no, but I think they prefer. Ramirez is doing quite well for them. Uh-huh. I think they prefer him. Yeah. And it'd be interesting to see what they'll do with this guy they've signed from Barcelona, Oriol Romeo.
Romeo,
well.
Yeah.
But now they've signed Mata, he'll maybe this kind of a shift towards being a more creative, inventive side, because they've been a very pragmatic, powerful team, and also they're still going to try. I think before Wednesday, they'll still try to sign Modric.
Yeah,
it does seem that the transition is far from being complete, though, doesn't it? At Chelsea,
yeah, you know. Yeah.
Michael, I know you've got a point you want to make. I want to ask you about Norwich. One thing, when they took off goalkeeper Ruddy, they put on his reserve. It's called Rudd. Is their third choice keeper called Ruh?
Yeah, possibly. Or maybe Rudd's nickname is Ruddy, because footballers are very imaginative like that, aren't they?
Right. Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I was just going to say that...
Ruzza.
Yeah, possibly. I was going to say that I think something that Villas Boas likes, he likes his defence to play really high up the pitch. That was very evident with Porto. They pressed very well. They're a very powerful side. I'm not sure Chelsea can do that with Alex and Terry, because neither of them are very fast. And it seemed to... It seemed to cause further problems, because the defence just looked nervous throughout the game. I mean, you look at the goal they conceded, and Hilario came miles off his line, shouldn't have been there, and was trying to punch it off Ivanovic's head. But Ivanovic had spent the whole game basically getting caught under the ball, and Grant Holt was coming at the far post. So, in a way, you can't blame Hilario, having spent, you know, half the game seeing headers fly at him because the players couldn't mark tight enough, to come out from the back and try and clear everything. I mean, it was a mistake, but you can understand why he made it, because the defence had looked so dodgy.
Do you think that Villas-Boas has the ingredients he needs, even if they pick up, say, Modric? Has he got the ingredients he needs to actually reproduce the form of Porto at Stamford Bridge?
I think in terms of the forward line in the midfield, probably. I'm still a little bit concerned about the defence. I'm confused as well, because they've been linked very heavily with Alvaro Pereira, who's predominantly a left back. And I saw today Paul Doyle wrote in the rumour mill that they've been linked with Leighton Baines.
Yeah. Mm. You'd think left back might not be an issue for them at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a backup left back, but neither of them will want to be backup.
They had Ziyechkov as well, who never played, and now he's gone.
Yeah, exactly. So it would just be another signing like
Pereira.
That.
Yeah.
I think they might need another centre-back. I mean, what's David Luiz?
Well, he's injured.
He's still injured?
Yeah.
It's a shame, because he does give you something different, doesn't he? He'd be a ball player.
To most
centre
defenders,
half,
absolutely. Well, there you go. So, quick snap, you know, judgment. Chelsea, are they going to be in the title mix?
I think they will be. I think they're third favourites, but I think they'll come on strongly when Villas-Boas gets them playing as he wants.
All right. He's certainly mastered the art of the post-game interview, isn't he? Feisty performance.
Paul Lambert, unlucky.
Yeah.
It was like in the playground.
Mm. Now, one or two other bits of Premier League business. Wolves. Yeah. They didn't win this time, but still, impressive result. They're still unbeaten. The West Midlands Derby, passionate affair as ever. Half-empty stadium there, Villa Park.
There was 30,000, should it be, but 40-odd.
Yeah, you'd have thought. Yeah. And it is, you know, it's supposedly a big fixture, this West Midlands Derby.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Mick McCarthy did very well because Wolves got battered, really, for the first three quarters of that game, despite it being 0-0. And on 67, 68 minutes, I think he took off his two wingers, Jarvis and Stephen Hunt, his two most creative players, essentially just put on two extra fullbacks, got them to defend narrow. And I think having conceded 16 shots in the first three quarters of the game, they conceded only two in the last quarter, so it worked very well.
Certainly did. They've yet to concede a goal this season.
Yes, and I mean, they had a terrible defensive record last season. They knew what they needed to do in terms of the transfer market. They brought in Roger Johnson, and now they're sorted. I think they'll do really well this season.
A lesson there, do you think, for some other clubs? Yeah. Now, Blackburn. Oh, Everton won. We mentioned this earlier.
Yeah.
Well, that was a strange game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Strange. Strange game.
Three penalties.
Yeah.
It was a very, very, basically absurd penalty decision against Christopher Samba. It just wasn't a penalty. But from behind the goal, it looked like Lee Mason wasn't even looking at the non-existent foul. I suppose Blackburn must have been doing something right to get the two penalties in the first place, and also Tim Howard made some pretty good saves. Steve Keane does look out of his depth, though.
But anyway,
no points.
Everton get the win. Newcastle won against Fulham, and Wigan. I thought they were going to struggle this year, but a terrific result for them.
They're unbeaten.
Still unbeaten. And West Brom lost again, poor chaps. Roy Hodgson blaming it all on Ben Foster. He said he could have chosen to take the studs in the chest, but unfortunately he made the decision to turn away, and so we lost the game.
In one way, it wasn't a particularly good piece of goalkeeping. I don't think Ben Foster's actually very good. I think he's one of those goalkeepers.
Apparently Hodgson doesn't either.
Yeah, no. Goalkeepers makes all the flashy saves, but then with that kind of stuff, cost you a game. Yeah.
I think that was their only shot on target, though, strangely. Mm. Or maybe not strangely.
And it was made by a man called Shot On.
and they're unbeaten, aren't they, after three games?
They certainly are.
And in the Europa League as well.
Yeah, they've been doing well in that.
Yeah.
Seven games unbeaten.
All right, that's enough, Stoke. That's it for part two. Coming up after this, Sid Lowe. Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm ever so well. You're going to the Bernabeu, Sid. Why?
Well, this makes it sound much worse than it is. I've got to sit through another recording of Real Madrid's pretty impressive 6-0 victory over Zaragoza. No se abre que da la vuelta, lo siento.
Yeah.
So we're just blocked off at the top of the road and we have to do a turnaround.
Yes, no, I no need to explain to us, Sid. Right, as you say,
Sid were very, very impressive indeed against Zaragoza.
Yes.
However, I suppose we should start the season with a few caveats, shouldn't we? That they, you know, it was up against a Zaragoza side who I think are going to be awful this year. I think they're going to find themselves in really pretty desperate straits near the bottom of the table. A Zaragoza side that also had a significant number of their players have only just turned up, and obviously they've still got to try and integrate them. They have the problem as well, I think, that Real Madrid came into it off a very, very good pre-season, having built their players up ready for the Super Bowl. So Madrid, in terms of preparation, were probably a couple of weeks ahead of them. And then, of course, their bottom line, which is the concerns that I think we've all got, at least most of us have got anyway, that this could be another indication of a league in which I think Madrid and Barcelona will absolutely wipe the floor with a good proportion of the first division teams.
Thank goodness we don't have that problem in the Premier League.
Real's extraordinary yesterday, wasn't it?
It was. Real's win, or Real's dominance, in fact, so total that even Kaká got a goal, I see.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to defend Ricky Kaká here. And I'm going to defend him by saying it's true that he didn't have the impact that everyone would have liked last season. But actually, if you look at his record as against the number of opportunities he got, it really wasn't too bad. Unfortunately, I haven't got the stats to hand, but I think I'm right in saying that in terms of goals per minute last year, he was something like the fifth best player in La Liga. Now, obviously, that doesn't necessarily stack up. You say, well, if he's not playing more, then there's a reason for that. And of course, there is a reason for that. He doesn't look as quick as he once did. I think I've said to you before that there are players in the dressing room who who think he just can't be the player he once was, and that's simply impossible now. But I still think there are moments when you see him do things that you think, yeah, he's a genuinely good player. He's still very elegant on the ball. His finishing is still very, very good indeed. And yeah, you're right. He did score a very nice goal yesterday.
All right, Ronaldo got a hat-trick. Sorry if this is boring, but is Kaká going to be there post-Wednesday evening?
Well, he said so. He said after the game yesterday that Mourinho is on his side, and he said, because obviously he knows, as you've rightly just pointed out, that it's Wednesday evening, and so therefore there's probably 3 days of this. He says, I know I'm going to go through 3 days of people talking about me, 3 days of people banging on about this, but I will still be at Real Madrid when the window closes. He's determined. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One, obviously, is the fact that he's determined that he thinks he may get a few minutes this year. I must confess, I still think he'll have a limited role. And also then there's the question mark about who's going to pay him, not just in terms of the wages, which are 9 million euros a year, but also in terms of someone offering a salary that will be big enough to win Real Madrid over, because they're going to want a significant chunk of the 65 million euros they spend.
Interesting. Right, okay, so they start off brilliantly. Barcelona, meantime, terrible start. They're in 13th place.
Yeah.
They haven't
played yet. They play tonight against Villarreal. Funnily enough, in the league table that's been offered to us by the Madrid press, Villarreal are ahead of Barcelona. That must be the head-to-head goal difference. No, alphabetical order.
All right, but they did pick up another trophy, did they not, Barcelona?
Yes, they did. They did, obviously, with Leo Messi scoring. What I do sometimes wonder whether people just don't like enjoying football, because I happened to mention on Friday night that I thought Messi's goal was great. And now, obviously, it was a complete gift. But the way he finished it, you and me tried to do that, James, our kneecaps would break. And then I had loads of people say, it's not a great goal, it's rubbish, they gave it to him. God, he's going on about Messi. I thought, well, it was pretty clever the way he finished it off.
It was an amazing
anyway
goal.
So yeah, Leo Messi scoring again. That's the only competition in which he has scored for Barcelona, so he's now scored in all of them, the European Super Cup being the one that was still left over. Another trophy for Barcelona. It's true that it's not a really big one in the sense that the European Super Cup is kind of an add-on rather than a trophy in its own right. The same goes to some extent for the Spanish Super Cup. It makes Barcelona the most successful coach in Barcelona's history in terms of trophies, and it makes Xavi Hernandez the most successful player in history at the club in terms of Barcelona's trophies. It's pretty impressive. It's a goal for Cesc.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Against nine-man Porto, this was, or nine-man by the end of the game, but as you say, Cesc goal, very impressive, no?
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit, and you know, I'm sure people will point out a series of significant differences, but it reminded me a little bit of the Kenny Dalglish goal that won the league in 86 at Chelsea. They're all scratching their heads now, aren't they, thinking they can't remember that at all?
No. Jacob insists he wasn't born. Are you joking, Jacob?
I don't think Michael would have been born either.
Michael, were you born in 86?
No,
Jesus.
I was born in 87. Or 87.
Jesus Christ.
That's terrifying,
that
isn't
is
it?
Awful, James. Christ almighty.
Oh, my word.
Can you not somehow kind of open the hatch door of the pod and boot them up for that?
Oh, dearie me. Sid, listen, enjoy yourself there at Real Madrid TV, and we'll catch up with you again soon, I hope.
Yep, I'll speak to you on Thursday.
Sid Lowe in Spain, wrapping things up for a brief part three in this Football Weekly. Football Weekly Extra returns on Thursday, looking forward, and how, to the round of internationals. Yes. Who have England got? Is it Wales? Is that right?
Bulgaria first, and then Wales at Wembley.
Okay, all right then. And that'll all be very exciting. Scotland?
Hopeless.
Do you think in 10 years' time we'll still be playing international football or not?
Yes, I think so. I think although people get bored by qualifiers, I think the World Cup finals and so on is...
Right,
enraptures the whole world, and I think no one wants to lose that, I don't think.
Okay. Yeah. All right, then. Well, that's it then for today's Football Weekly. We're back on Thursday with Football Weekly Extra. Meantime, thanks very much, Kevin McCarra. Nice to see you back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you back, Jacob Steinberg.
Thanks.
Nice to see you back, Michael Cox of Zonalmarking.net. And nice to see you back, Ben Producer. Have a super week. Speak to you on Thursday. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.